Welcome back, folks. Glad you're here. Hour number two. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. Of course, a different opening song every midnight as we try to keep people on their toes. Welcome back. As I mentioned, hour number two here. It is now officially Saturday, March 10th, 2007, about 1 minute past midnight here in the Central Time Zone. I'm glad you're with us. Welcome to all of you joining us on shortwave at frequency 3.215. Welcome to all of you listening online at republicbroadcasting.org as well as franklyspeakingradio.com. Our phone number, and we'll be taking calls later on the program with our guest tonight, is 800-313-9443. That's toll-free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. And our guest, the author of the following books, The Reich of the Black Sun, The SS Brotherhood of the Bell, The Giza Death Star, The Giza Death Star Deployed, and The Giza Death Star Destroyed, and more books on the way, undoubtedly. Joseph Farrell, welcome back, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Frank. It's a blast, as always.
Yeah, I have a great time in all of our conversations, and I just, it goes by so fast. It really, really does.
It is.
Well, when we left off, we were talking about the different things. You mentioned about the, is it the Grand Gallery it's called?
Yeah, the Grand Gallery inside of the Great Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the texts of Zechariah Sitchin, as I mentioned before the break, indicate that a kind of an inventory was taken of some components in the structure after the end of a war.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as a matter of fact, in the new book coming out, I go into the texts that he refers to quite extensively. I cite them extensively and additional texts besides. It's a book that's chock full of some very ancient texts. But, you know, the idea of an inventory and hauling off some of these components for use elsewhere and destruction of some others may sound kind of far-fetched. But if we think about it, at the end of World War One and the end of World War Two, the Allies did exactly the same thing with Germany. They prohibited the Germans from developing certain technologies that had been a major headache.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of World War II, of course, they hauled off quite a bit of German technology. So, you know, we're dealing with something that if we look at it and think about it in a modern context,
mm-hmm.
is not really all that far-fetched. In fact, it makes a lot of sense. The behavior hasn't really changed that much. So I don't find it incredible that the text would refer to these things. I do think it's very interesting because what the texts themselves would indicate means that some of these components are still around. They may be lying under layers of dust in some desert somewhere, but they at least are still around, and that kind of brings us back to where we started the last hour,
mm-hmm.
that the esoteric tradition, by its own reckoning, begins with the flood and with the attempt to preserve some of the knowledge of that lost civilization and the attempt to recover some of that technology. Now, if that technology was used, as I believe it was, in a frightfully destructive war of just gigantic and admittedly interplanetary nature, then the recovery of that technology may not be such a good thing. Any way one slices this, we are dealing with a very, very strange and complex scenario.
That's incredible. Well, so in essence, when people walk through the Great Pyramid these days, they would think, "Wow, I'm walking through, you know, an old tomb or a place of worship or whatever people might think it to be." But in essence, they're walking around maintenance corridors of a giant machine.
Right,
it's amazing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow.
And, you know, those empty spaces and chambers in the pyramid, as I point out in the three books, really have a functional purpose. They are part of the machine.
Well, I want to talk about some of the different technology that we can speculate or know comprise these machine pieces, and
sure.
We'll go into that. Folks, stay with us. Our guest this evening, Joseph P. Farrell, and more Frankly Speaking Radio in 3 minutes.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headaches Stay Gone. See HeadachesStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headaches Stay Gone. Headaches Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headaches Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Attention, attention everyone! A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E.com.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Welcome back. Glad you're here, my friends. The fastest 4 hours in talk radio, no different tonight. Our special guest this evening, Joseph P. Farrell, author of numerous books, including the series we're discussing tonight, the Giza Death Star series. It's a trilogy, 3 books, and, gosh, just so much information, every one of them. Welcome back, Joseph.
Oh, thanks, Frank. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Always. Well, we have a great time. Hey, so I was just flipping through the books, obviously, and so many incredible diagrams, drawings, photographs, illustrations, any number of things that you could possibly want or need, which is great for me. I'm more of a visual guy. I want to be able to see sort of and get a concept for what I'm doing, and you're wonderful with that in all of your books. You do sort of explain everything, and then, you know, people turn the page, and there it is for them to look at.
Right.
And I was referring to the Grand Gallery here with Helmholtz resonators.
Right.
Now, what are these things?
Well, in Chris Dunn's theory of that's from the Giza Death Star, and mm-hmm. it's from a chapter that I basically reprise his theory of the pyramid mm-hmm. being a power plant.
Mm-hmm.
Helmholtz resonators are spherical objects with a little hole cut in one side. They're of different sizes, and they're made to be resonant to certain acoustic frequencies. So they're kind of like a flute in a certain sense. You blow across them, they resonate to certain musical tones.
Hmm.
And his speculation is that the Grand Gallery was full of bank upon bank, 27 banks, as a matter of fact, to correspond with the 27 slots in the Grand Gallery, of these Helmholtz resonators, which in turn, by imparting acoustic energy to the hydrogen gas that he believes filled the pyramid, made it resonate and function to step up its electron excitement states. Mm. And then when the hydrogen fell back into a de-excited state, it would release photons of energy of a certain frequency, which in turn powered or fired the maser that he believes was part of the coffer, the optical cavity for a maser. So in other words, he's done his homework. He's looking at the pyramid from the standpoint of an engineer, and that's what he is an engineer. He works for an aerospace company in Illinois. So, you know, this is not somebody that is a slouch by any means. He's quite capable and has some very interesting theories of his own, and they're worthwhile pursuing in their own right. But my speculation goes a bit further. Mm-hmm. I believe that these resonators, and I do think it's very clear that the Grand Gallery is an acoustic resonating chamber and an amplifying chamber. When Napoleon's soldiers entered the Great Pyramid in the 18th century during his expedition to Egypt, they fired off pistols inside of there and were just astounded at the amplification of the sound that was made in that chamber. So it is constructed. Any engineer can look at the thing and tell you that it's constructed like a great big huge amplification chamber. So the speculation that I indulge is based on the text that Sitchin uses to present his theory of missing components, that these were not only acoustically resonant objects, but they were crystals of some sort that were also electromagnetically resonant to the same harmonies that were being resonated acoustically, stepped up several orders of magnitude. So we're dealing with a device, in other words, that is electroacoustic, and that means scalar in nature. And once we've said that, then we really are saying that this was a device of extraordinary power and sophistication. And it also means something else, and I think people kind of miss this about what I'm saying. The Great Pyramid that remains there is the shell of a machine.
Yes.
Components are missing. So in other words, in answer to your earlier question, could we turn this thing back on? Well, the short answer is no, not without knowing exactly what some of these missing components are. But since we've brought that subject up, we can look at the esoteric tradition again. And in particular, the Hebrew and the Egyptian traditions both contain the idea that there are certain power objects that were made of crystal. For example, in the book of Ezekiel, I think it's chapter 28, but don't cite me on that. My mind is this hour of the night doesn't function too well.
Okay.
But in the book of Ezekiel, the fall of Lucifer is referred to, but it's referred to in a very interesting way. It refers to the loss of certain gemstones on his crown. And it's very interesting because this is kind of the origin within the Judeo-Christian tradition of the lapis exilis, or the stone of exile. In other words, that Lucifer had some object of power that he lost when he fell that was in part the basis of his power and hegemony.
Wow.
And this idea is actually paralleled a great deal in Egyptian lore, esoteric lore, because the Egyptian god of wisdom, Tahuta — it's spelled T-H-O-T-H, but it's pronounced Tahuta — the Egyptian god of wisdom is also accredited with having inscribed all of his lore and wisdom or science on emerald tablets, which he then secreted somewhere around the environs of Egypt, nobody knows where. Now, you know, that's kind of fanciful esoteric lore, but then when we go to Sumer, we discover in Sumerian texts, and this is really a motif that I explore in great detail in the new book, there are endless references to the so-called tablets of destinies. And these, again, are objects that are very evidently stones of some sort. In some Sumerian translations, they are referred to as light-emitting stones. In other words, they're crystals of some sort.
Yeah.
And they are also the cause, in the Sumerian texts, for the ancient war of the gods. Because at some point they are stolen by various members of the Sumerian pantheon, who then use them to wage war against all the other gods. And it's a theme that repeats itself over and over. So in other words, this is a very important concept for some reason to the Sumerians. So we're dealing with three different traditions, really, that all are saying the same thing, that there's some lost technology that is based on crystals that at some point are actually the causes belli of a major war, and in the new book I interpret that to be an interplanetary war that was fought in our own solar system, and present various evidence why I think that's the case. But we're dealing with a lost technology, and all three traditions, interestingly enough, also make it rather clear that some of this technology is still around somewhere. Mm. So, you know, it kind of puts a new spin. You know, why are we really in Iraq?
It's not
just for terrorism and to protect oil interests and to establish a military base, because I recall that incident that occurred shortly after our invasion when we got to Baghdad, where objects from the Baghdad Museum just suddenly went missing.
That's true.
And then all of a sudden they turn up again. You know, they were found. Well, I find it extremely suspicious that this incident occurred, and it occurred in such a way, you know, after we had warned the Germans and French that they ought to get their archaeological teams out of there because we're coming in. So, you know, what are the Germans and the French sending, sending archaeological teams to Saddam Hussein? So, you know, just extending the speculation a bit further, maybe they were talking about weapons of mass destruction of an entirely different sort and of a very ancient sort. You know, these people, these elites, talk in code all the time, and when they launch a major operation like that, they're usually doing so with an aim to achieve several objectives at the same time.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's also part of my speculation in this new book, particularly concerning the Sumerian Tablets of Destiny. And and in the new book, I have a great deal of effort that I expend to explain what I think they were. In fact, I think I'm probably I'm going to toot my own horn here, which I don't like doing, but I think I may have solved what they were.
Really?
Yes. And it's again based on these ideas of physics and the hints from the texts themselves that suggest certain things are in play. And when one matches those up with certain physics notions, one gets an idea that these things were part of the same scalar physics components of these machines. They were the software, so to speak, that made them work.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It's, you know, it's an Indiana Jones puzzle. There's so many pieces to cobble together and fit precisely. But I think that's what they were. But, you know, even if they weren't, what we're dealing with these three different traditions are a persistent suggestion that some sort of technology involving crystals was known to this ancient advanced civilization that we simply do not now know that can be recovered.
That's incredible, absolutely incredible. And there's more, folks. Prepare to be amazed by our guest, Joseph P. Farrell. He'll be joining us again when we come back here in 3 minutes. Hopefully you will stick around as well. And we'll have time for phone calls, but again, there's just so much content. You know, I don't even know what to say from here. Hang on. We'll be right back.
When you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of Choice Garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Welcome back, folks. Glad you're here. Our special guest this evening, Joseph P. Farrell. Joseph, welcome back. I got to tell you, your information here is inspiring a lot of debate between my producer and I off the air as well. So you've really got the wheels turning, I imagine, for everybody listening tonight, and I appreciate you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Frank. It's always fun.
Yeah, we have a great time, absolutely. Hey, I wanted to ask you about this because this is, a lot of people might say, okay, weapon of mass destruction, where is the evidence? where's the evidence that weapons of mass destruction have been used before? Because obviously when we're talking about nuclear devices being used or anything like that,
right,
presumably there's always going to be some evidence, radioactivity or something left behind. And you actually reference a New York Herald Tribune article from February 16th, 1947. Tell us about that.
Well, that is an interesting article. It was purportedly an interview that was done with Robert Oppenheimer, who, of course, was the chief of our Manhattan Project and the father of our atomic bomb. And many people don't know that Dr. Oppenheimer was also a Sanskrit scholar. He was very interested in ancient Hindu texts. And accordingly, he, of course, would have been familiar with the Hindu epics, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. And there is a famous quotation from the Mahabharata that Oppenheimer actually quoted at the Trinity test site in New Mexico when they detonated our plutonium bomb. And that quotation was, "Behold, I have become as death." And the reason that he quoted that is it's from a section in the Mahabharata that is eerily, I've read this section, and anybody who has will tell you the same thing, that the section of this epic describes in almost uncanny detail the effects of a nuclear weapon blast. It describes hair falling out of victims, teeth falling out, the scorching of the earth, a burning cloud, and so on and so forth. And there are sites in India, Mohenjo-Daro being one of them, a city that is literally vitrified, stone melted with skeletons of people that were caught going about their daily business, melted into the stone. And the interesting thing is that when Soviet scientists went there in the 50s and measured the radioactivity of the site, it had a radioactivity that was commensurate with Hiroshima. So, you know, factoring in radioactive decay and everything, this means that whatever was used at this site eons ago was extremely potent in terms of its nuclear radioactivity. So these sites do exist, but this 1947 article, a reporter asked Dr. Oppenheimer if this was the first time a nuclear device had been used, referring to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And Oppenheimer's response was yes, and then apparently he had lowered his voice so that only those in his immediate vicinity, and the reporter apparently had heard this, he lowered his voice and then he said, "In modern times." So in other words, Oppenheimer was a believer that this was not the first time man had acquired a nuclear capability and used it, that it had been used eons ago. And another interesting bit of evidence is that there is in the southwestern Egyptian desert on the border of Libya an area of green silicate glass that's called the Libyan Desert Glass. And most people think, most scientists think, that this was caused by a meteor impact, but the problem was that this area has no crater. It's just fused green silicate glass like you would find at the Trinity site in New Mexico. In other words, it's the signature of a nuclear blast. And another interesting thing is in Iraq, there were excavations that were done by a British archaeologist, I forget what his name was, that went down through about 10,000 years layers of silt and deposits, and they came to a final layer of kind of remains of a hunter-gatherer society, little broken tools and hunting implements and so on, and then there was a tremendous layer of nothing. And then below that layer of nothing was another layer of green silicate glass at about 8 to 10,000 years B.C.
Wow.
So the archaeological evidences are there. One just has to look at them and examine them a certain way.
And know what they represent.
And know what they represent, precisely. There's even a NASA photo of Sinai, the Sinai Peninsula, that is on the hardcover edition of the jacket of one of Sitchin's books that shows an enormous crater, and it's very interesting.
Wow. Another break, my friend. Stay with us, folks. Back in 3 minutes, but in the interim, check out the website there, www.adventuresunlimitedpress.com. We will give out the phone number to place orders throughout the course of the evening, so have a pen and paper handy. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Welcome back, folks. Glad you're here. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whelan. Our guest this evening, Joseph Farrell, author of The Giza Death Star Deployed, and The Giza Death Star Destroyed. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it. And when we left off, we were talking about archaeological proof of weapons of mass destruction being used 10,000 years ago. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. And there's more, of course, as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in such a scenario, and I do follow his scenario in this detail, although I have a number of significant disagreements with him in other cases, mm-hmm. but in his scenario, an ancient war was fought precisely to get rid of the Great Pyramid as a weapon. And in this war, nuclear weapons were used by his reconstruction of the texts. And it's interesting that when we look at the remains of this desert silicate glass, or the case of Mohenjo-Daro, we're looking precisely at the dispersion of archaeological evidence in the areas that this civilization existed according to the texts. In other words, in the areas of modern-day Egypt, Iraq, and the Indus Valley in India.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, we should, by the text, expect to find evidences there, and that's where we find them. And it's interesting that in the case of Mohenjo-Daro, that the radioactivity of the site is so incredibly high.
Mm.
So, you know, we're not dealing with an absence of evidence. It's really quite the converse. We're dealing with evidence that, by the standard line, hasn't really been adequately explained.
Mm. Well said. Very well said. Well, and the other thing that really blew my mind was, and forgive me if I butcher this name, Viracocha.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That's an amazing analysis.
Yeah, that is, you're referring to the icon, as it were, of Viracocha on the Sun Gate at Tiwanaku in Bolivia. And I reproduced that in the Giza Death Star,
mm-hmm.
because if you look at it, it's, to my way of looking at it, it's a schematic of a technical device, not necessarily a god, although
mm-hmm.
it looks like a god. And if you look at it carefully, it has the basic ingredients, although highly stylized and so on and so forth. It has the basic ingredients of a fission-fusion, fission-hydrogen bomb. You can kind of see an implosion core with various little things that surround the core that would probably be kind of like our modern-day layer cake method of detonating a hydrogen bomb.
Mm.
It then has a secondary fission device below it that, again, would correspond to a uranium casing in a modern-day hydrogen bomb. So, in other words, wherever one turns, we can kind of look at little evidences that exist that some sort of sophisticated technology did exist at one time. And it gets even more... It gets even more uncanny if we go off-world and examine some of the strange things on Mars or on the Moon. There, you know, once we step off the Earth, it gets positively frightening.
Mm.
Because if we look at the ancient texts, I go into this extensively in the new book, the ancient texts refer to the various gods as having divine weapons or divine arrows or divine lightning or whatever. And if we look at the moon, there are places on the moon that could only have been carved out by enormous electrical arcing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a massive planetary feature on the surface of Mars called the Valles Marineris that could only have been carved out by massive electrical discharge, lightning strikes that would just boggle our mind. So if we couple that with the evidences of the ancient texts,
mm-hmm.
we can read that in two ways. We can read those texts as indicating catastrophes of a naturalistic nature, and that's the way that most people prefer to look at such things. But I take the view that these texts, when they speak of these weapons being used in real wars, are meaning exactly what they say, that these are not artifacts of a natural catastrophe, they are artifacts of a war. And to do that, to corroborate that, then we have to look for things of an artificial nature on those other worlds. And, of course, Mars, most people are probably familiar in your audience with all of the anomalies that surround Sidonia.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But there are similar things on the moon that people may not be aware of. Shards that stick up a mile and a half from the surface of the moon, which simply shouldn't be there if the standard model of meteoric bombardment is true.
Mm-hmm.
There are regular features, rectilinear features on the surface of the moon that just defy any naturalistic geological explanation for their occurrence. And again, I reproduce these in the new book as part of an exploration of the scenario of a cosmic war.
Wow.
But, you know, the archaeological evidence is there. One just has to kind of look for it and dig for it and then find a context for it that makes sense. And,
mm-hmm.
and the context that, to my mind, makes the most sense is to take these ancient texts seriously when they refer to the wars of the gods, you know. And this is not something that's simply peculiar to the Judeo-Christian tradition with the fall of Lucifer and the war in heaven between Michael and his hosts and Lucifer and so on. This is a theme that one finds in Sumerian texts, in Egyptian texts, in classical Greek mythology, in Roman mythology, in Scandinavian mythology, mm-hmm. in American Indian legends, in Chinese mythology. All over the world we have these traditions of the wars of the gods.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm inclined to take them seriously when they refer to wars and view them as referring to something that actually happened, because the archaeological data, I think, corroborates it.
That's amazing, and it makes so much sense, because when you think about it, there's really no mythology or legend that really doesn't have some sort of basis in truth. So,
right.
You know, we always assume that saying wars or battles that is a metaphor for something else. But what if it's just simple stuff? It's kind of like when you're in school, Joseph, and the teacher tells you to read this book, and it's, I don't know, whatever it is, and you read it and say, well, this is what it's about. And they're like, but what does that mean to you? It's exactly what I just said. Why
yeah,
does that
exactly.
have to mean anything? Sometimes
it doesn't mean any more than what it just said.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sometimes a fence post is just a fence post. You know,
right.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, exactly. You know, sometimes wars are just wars.
That's right.
You know, they're not metaphors for collisions of comets. And
there you go. People, we tend to make things overly complicated.
Well, you know, this is a subject that I actually devote a chapter to in the new book. It's what I call the catastrophe of catastrophism. That's the name of the chapter. And it goes into this idea, exemplified particularly in the works of Alan Alford, that everything in these ancient legends becomes a metaphor for collisions of planets and accidental mm-hmm. destructions of life on various worlds and mm-hmm. meteor impacts on the Earth and yada, yada, yada. But if we examine the texts, they all refer to these catastrophes, but they make it clear that these catastrophes, including the flood, are the result of a war. So rather than viewing it as a big metaphor for these catastrophes, I kind of turn the whole thing on its head, and I say that the war is the cause of these catastrophes.
Wow.
And once you do that, of course, again, you're not in with the Jonquils and Daisies crowd of,
you know, yes.
of ancient text interpretation. But once you do that, you're also implying something else. You're implying the existence of a technology that made those things possible. And once you imply that, and you maintain that there was an ancient war that was fought in our local celestial space with weapons of horrendous power and sophistication, then you're kind of opening the bag as to the question of, well, then, if that is so, what's the real purpose of the space program?
Mm.
And why are we really going to the moon and going to Mars? And you know, why all the interest in these so-called dead worlds? And why are we spending so much treasure and thought and time to get there? And the answer that the ancient text would indicate is again, that some of this technology is lost but may be recoverable. And the ancient texts themselves point to certain celestial bodies in our local space and not others. For example, in the third book, The Giza Death Star Destroyed, as you know, I point out that if you take the computer image of the so-called face at Sidonia and turn it on its side, that face looked at from the side in computer rectification looks astonishingly like an ancient Babylonian frieze or mosaic of the Babylonian god Nergal.
Mm.
Now, it's very interesting that should be the case, because the Babylonian god Nergal, if you read the text, is this notoriously genocidal, nasty character. I mean, he's like Adolf Hitler to the 10th power. And he's just, you know, one of my friends that's an expert in these texts calls him Nergal the Nuker, because this guy is just a character. You know, mm-hmm. his solution to everything is to annihilate his opponents.
Wow.
But he
the
also,
president, isn't
oh,
he?
Yeah, exactly. Well, but the other thing is that Nergal just so happens to be the Babylonian god of war,
wow.
of rebellion, and of Mars.
How
you know,
about that?
Yeah, he's the Babylonian equivalent of the Greek Ares or the Roman Mars.
Wow.
So it's just one of those coincidences that once you start piling up enough of these coincidences, then what are the actual aerial odds that they are coincidences? Well, the more you pile them up, the less they become coincidences. And that's my point. And that's just one of many, many little things that one can look at in terms of this ancient war and these weapons of tremendous power and sophistication. It just goes in so many different areas. And, you know, the third Giza book is really kind of the end of the Giza Death Star trilogy, but it's also kind of the jumping off point for this new book where I explore this scenario of the cosmic war in its own right, you know, freed of references to Giza and so on and so forth. So it's a very, very interesting tapestry that we're weaving. And just for a moment to bring the Nazis back into this here, you know, we started out, well, why am I writing about the Great Pyramid and Nazi secret weapons? You know, they would seem to be discreetly disjunct subjects, but they're not. Because the Nazis, of course, had an entire branch of the SS established for the purpose of doing nothing else other than to investigate ancient texts and ancient ideas of science for the possible purpose of exploiting and recovering the technology that might have been involved. So if we couple that with the fact that the Nazis are also making gigantic strides to put themselves into space, one begins to wonder just exactly what the agenda really was. And that agenda, I think, probably carried over into the Soviet and American programs after the war. I think it's all of a piece.
Wow. That is incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's breathtaking.
Yeah.
You know, and I probably sound to your audience like a kook, but
no.
But I want to assure your audience that unlike many researchers in the alternative field, I footnote my books very heavily. And,
yes.
And when I am speculating, I attempt to make it very clear, but I attempt to make very clear the basis on which I am speculating. Mm-hmm. In other words, I'm not pulling things out of thin air. I'm doing it with a reason and a purpose and with a basis in actual scientific papers.
Yeah, actually, yes. You have just countless sources throughout all of your books, and absolutely, it's all well documented. And you give credit to everybody that you have sort of taken their idea and changed it into something else. And of course, you know, inevitably, people will be probably writing about your books and your ideas and trying to take that concept further.
Right.
I mean, that's what research is all about.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, everything is sourced in here. These things are unchallengeable in my mind.
I admit that what I'm talking about here is a highly speculative scenario.
Oh, yeah.
But let's look at things honestly here. You know, what kind of got me started in all this was really when I first heard Richard Hoagland way back in the 80s when Larry King was the overnight radio talk show guru.
Mm.
And I listened with just rapt fascination to Hoagland's presentation of what he had discovered and he and his associates had uncovered at Sedonia, and I've been following that religiously almost ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And I am fairly well persuaded that Hoagland has made the case that those ruins on Mars are exactly that. They are ruins of something, of a civilization. And once we state that, then we have to explain why those ruins would have. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I thought the line went dead there. I heard a click. That we had a maybe somebody's listening. That
yeah,
it's not
certainly
part
possible.
Of the normal radio audience. You know.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, welcome aboard
to all of our new listeners.
Welcome aboard to all of our new listeners at Fort Meade. But anyway, but you know, once we've said that, we have to explain why these ruins would have such an architectural similarity to civilizations on Earth.
Mm.
And, of course, once we pose the question that way, then we've really opened up the Pandora's box to the possibility of a very, very ancient, very sophisticated interplanetary civilization right here in our own celestial neighborhood.
Wow.
And if we go as far as I do in my books, as to say that the missing exploded planet in our solar system, and that's what the asteroid belt is, it's a missing planet that blew up.
Hmm.
Well, I am not satisfied that the catastrophe's explanation for why that planet exploded is true, because the physics of doing that is so difficult. You would have to have an extremely massive object entering the solar system, colliding with the planet, and that would leave signatures on the orbits of the remaining planets that simply aren't there. So we have to look for another explanation, and the only one that makes any physics sense to me, as odd as it sounds, is that someone pressed a button and literally blew it up. And incidentally, in the new book, I present a much more thorough examination of Dr. Tom Van Flandern's exploded planet hypothesis, and that is actually one of the things that he himself entertained. So in other words, I'm not the one that even thought of it. It was actually the guy that thought of the hypothesis to begin with, that thought of, well, there are problems with the net. We have to have another explanation, and it may have been deliberate action.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Folks, we are coming up here on another break. We'll be back in 3 minutes to conclude this hour. And, gosh, you know, like I said, there's still so much information. We'll see how long we can convince our guests to stay with us, and we'll get some of your phone calls in as well. So please stay with us, folks.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Attention, attention everyone! A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Of your
Welcome back, folks. Glad you're here. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen, tail end of our second hour already. And from what I understand, our special guest this evening, Joseph Farrell, is going to stay with us.
Sure, absolutely.
Ah, this is great. Boy, it's been a great week for people wanting to stay on the whole time. And, of course, I know the listeners love that as well. Let me give out our phone number, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to weigh in with your thoughts, feel free to do so. 800-313-9443. Toll free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Joseph, I'll probably dance back and forth here between some various things. But
sure.
What I'd like to highlight here, and this will probably carry us into the next hour, I'm sure, is, in essence, if you think about secret societies, and again, as you referenced Ralph Epperson earlier, he talked about the $1 bill on Monday,
right,
and about the Great Pyramid and things like that. Most of the secret societies, not only are they secret because they keep their activities secret, but they're secret because they know secrets.
Right.
And that's the whole premise here.
Right.
So if you look at the Nazis and the integration of secret society theory into that government and the
right.
pursuit of these technologies, in essence, the Nazis did almost all of the legwork.
Yeah. This is about the best way of putting it, is what you just said. They did a great deal, pardon me, of legwork. Their ideology prohibited, of course, what they considered Jewish physics,
mm-hmm.
which meant that they prohibited relativity theory. And that threw them back on their own homegrown Aryan so-called physics, which was mm-hmm. quantum mechanics.
Yes.
And so I speculate a great deal, in particularly in SS Brotherhood of the Bell,
mm-hmm.
that certain of their physicists, whose specialty was gravity and various aspects of quantum mechanics, developed a very different paradigm of physics that led ultimately to what we now call in modern times scalar physics. And I believe that the case can be made that this is exactly the sort of things that they were investigating with the Bell and with some of their other advanced projects.
And that's such an important point, in
right.
essence, and just to dumb it down for people like myself. You know, I play music, Joseph, and,
right.
and I taught myself how to do it. And I remember when I began to play with other people, they would say, you can't make those kind of chord progressions, you know, you can't go from here to here. You know, it was outside the realm of what they had been instructed
right.
was the norm. So
right.
when you remove those self-imposed boundaries of anything, like science and whatnot, you can really go anywhere. And if you can
right.
go anywhere, something's going to work. And if you have a
right.
basis for that, as the Nazis did with their secret society influences, boy, it really opens up a whole new realm of opportunity
right.
to develop things. And if you're twisted and evil, as the Nazis were, and of course the secret societies that have backed them, gosh, it's an incomparable point to be made here, that if this legwork, as we had said here, was done all in the 30s and 40s, gosh, where are we now? And if
yeah.
we can find, and there's so many parallels made between this government that we have now and you know, the Nazi regime, boy, it makes you wonder when you start looking at all these different connections of Freemason presidents and things like that.
Right. It does. And you know, the other thing that I should stress is even the German flag of the Weimar Republic and then the Nazis
right.
official flag, the colors are red, white, and black.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are the same three colors of Atlantis.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you dig in the literature, that's what you'll find.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah.
we obviously have a lot of places to go. Stay with us, folks. Another legal identification here. Only 90 seconds. We'll be back. And again, our phone number, if you want to weigh in, 800-313-9443. More Frankly Speaking Radio with our special guest, Joseph Farrell, when we return.